Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at buyheart.com/podcast with codename Zibby20 for a limited time.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zibbymedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Savannah Guthrie is the author of Mostly What God Does, Reflections on Seeking and Finding His Love Everywhere. Savannah Guthrie is the co-anchor of NBC News' Today, NBC News' chief legal correspondent, and a primary anchor for the network's election coverage. She was named co-host of Today in 2012. Savannah is a graduate of Georgetown Law and a New York Times best-selling author for her book, Princesses Wear Pants, and the sequel, Princesses Save the World. She is the executive producer of the Netflix show Princess Power, based on the book series. Savannah is married to communications consultant Mike Feldman, and the couple has a daughter, Vale, and a son, Charlie. Welcome, Savannah. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Mostly What God Does, Reflections on Seeking and Finding His Love Everywhere. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Zibby. I love the name of your podcast. I feel like you see me. I don't have time to read. I don't know where I find time to write.
Seriously, maybe that should be the question of the hour. But first, tell listeners what your book is about and what inspired you to write it.
So my book is a book about faith, and it's a series of essays. They're just really short little reflections about different aspects of faith. But it's not a memoir. I come right out and say, this is not a memoir. This is not my life story. But at the same time, it's really personal, because if you're going to write about faith and what you believe and what you've learned along the way, you end up telling a lot of your personal stories. And so I do. And usually they're not stories of my great triumphs. They're more often stories of sadness and disappointment and setbacks and questioning and doubt and all of those things. So I tried to write not from a place of certainly any special knowledge or expertise. I come right out and say at the beginning, I'm not a theologian or a biblical scholar, and I'm not holding my life up as any kind of example that anyone should follow, but just a person who loves God and who figured out that God loves me and every human heart. And figuring that out and how I figured that out has changed everything for me.
Well, it's surprising that you didn't go to divinity school or anything like that, because your command of the Bible and the Psalms and all these things, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, I feel like I did not pay as close attention in Hebrew school, I must say. So, you know.
Well, I mean, over the years, I've, you know, been interested. And so I've studied and I've been writing down. So it's sort of like 20 years of thinking and reflecting. But I was so nervous when I wrote the book because, you know, just to put that out there, you're like, oh my gosh, people who actually know could read this. And so I was so happy because my publisher said, don't worry, we have a theologian that can, will read the entire book and make sure like you're not making up stuff. So that's a big relief for me.
Yeah. Thank God for fact checkers.
Yes.
What I really want to know is more about your shoplifting.
Oh, I know. Well, I told you these lessons get learned not on your bright, shining moments, but in your embarrassing ones. Yes, I confessed that in junior high, I had a little shoplifting phase as a teenager. And I used it as an example of, you know, those times when you are overwhelmed with guilt, but how good it feels to come clean and be forgiven. And so I remembered that from being 13 years old and having, as I've now learned, many 13-year-olds go through this exact phase, you know, where you go to the drugstore and take Tic Tacs or lip smackers or mascara or whatever. But I lived with that guilt for the good part of a summer and then finally confessed to my mother one day, who was fully disgusted with me, as she should have been. But, you know, that was an obvious moment where you do something wrong. It's horrifying. It you're flooded with guilt. But then having come clean, told the truth to yourself, and in my case, to my mom's, my father, you know, then I felt released. And so I kind of used that as a jumping off point to talk about, you know, we all often carry some guilt or shame or something that we know we've somehow fallen short of love in our lives, and that there's such a singular relief in telling the truth to yourself and telling the truth to God and finding out that you're forgiven and loved anyway.
It's amazing. I feel like I was less forgiven than you when I stole some Sunkist from the stockroom of, I don't know, my mom. I remember this. So I feel like everyone remembers the story of when they stole the first time or if they tried and what happened. And I was so mortified because I like took the Sunkist and put it in the car, and she like made me get up out of the car and back in there and apologizing to the guy. And I was so humiliated that I never did it again. So there you go.
Well, it stuck with you, but see, you got it caught immediately where
I did,
mine was that I had a short shoplifting career. So she couldn't, it wasn't really possible to say, go back to the store and return everything, you know? So it was but I believe me, she was not pleased.
I think I was like 6. This is like really bad. But anyway, I know I feel like there are so many stories, you're right, that if I were a manager of a drugstore, I feel like I would just keep my eyes trained on 13-year-olds nonstop. You know, 13 to 16, like, forget it.
Prime suspect.
Prime suspect. Yeah, that's a better way to say it. You jump around in the book from, you know, deeply emotional passages to more, you know, fun, and then telling us about, you know, having kids and then like this devastating, you know, pregnancy loss of a good friend. There's one passage that I thought was really great because you opened up the most. I know you started by saying, it's not a memoir, but I felt like, not to be creepy, I just like wanted to know more and more about you, you know, like tell me, trying to find the you and all of the stuff. So can I just read this paragraph? Is that okay?
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
You said, like so many people, I struggle with dark and foreboding thoughts. I don't know if mine has a clinical name, anxiety perhaps. No matter. I don't need to name it. I know it by heart. I would know it anywhere. That heavy feeling of dread, worry, and guilt gripping my heart like a vice. The tightening, gnawing feeling of discomfort, unease. It is a dis-ease, if not an actual disease, a persistent, occasionally relentless sense of impending doom. Its defining feature is its mystery. Why do I feel like this? Why do I feel this way? Often, I can't even put my finger on it. I rack my brain for the source, scanning my memory, movements, and interactions, looking for the real reason I might feel so unsettled. Did I do something wrong? Tell me about this feeling. How often
do you feel
this way?
Welcome to my psyche.
Yes.
You're going to go run screaming. It's so funny because when I wrote it, you know, I asked my editor at some point, I'm like, am I coming across like a basket case? I'm actually quite chipper. But I think a lot of us struggle with versions of these kinds of dark thoughts. You know, mine might kind of head toward guilt and shame, and others might go through anger or frustration or despair, but you know, that kind of feeling like, why do I have this heaviness about me? And I think that was in a chapter that I wrote called Turn Your Eyes. And it's about how in those moments, you know, we especially today, we're so lucky in our modern culture, we have so many different wellness techniques, meditation, journaling, we have so much more access to therapy and that kind of thing. But I'm saying beyond all those things, and in addition to, sometimes what we really need is a perspective, the perspective that is far beyond ourselves. And for me, that perspective is faith. And looking up and out of my circumstances and realizing that I'm not in charge. Because when you worry like that, and when you have that anxiety, or you're exacting this terrible judgment on yourself, of course, what you're actually doing, the subtext is that you're in charge, that you are kind of the God of your life. And actually, it's quite a relief, especially if you believe in the God that I believe in, that a God of love and compassion who has been human and connects with every human heart, to lift your perspective and remember that that's who's actually in control. It's a great relief and a great comfort. And when I'm feeling that way, that sense of foreboding, this is something I try to do, look up, look out, and turn my eyes upward and heavenward. You know, I write about the first day I anchored the Today Show as the main anchor and how terrified I was. And I came in at a moment of controversy for the show. I mean, people were not clamoring for Savannah Guthrie to host the show. You know, I kind of got thrown in there and I was pretty sure I was a temporary transitional solution that was going to get thrown by the wayside. And I was so scared. And the morning I was to begin, I knew the eyes of the world were on me, at least my news world. And I came down with a blinding migraine. And the kind of migraines I have, you know, I can't see. My vision is cut out. You know, words disappear. And so I laid down 20 minutes before air on the floor of this dressing room. And I was just like, I prayed. And this verse came to me. And the verse was, I had memorized it years and years before, but suddenly it popped into my head, seemingly out of nowhere. I looked to the hills. Where does my help come from? It comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And I knew in that moment that the call was to look up and out and know that help was on the way. And the help wasn't, it wasn't for me to do it myself, because here I had run right into my own shortcomings and fears and weaknesses and physical frailty and every kind of frailty, but to look up and out and look on the horizon and who's on the way, who is coming up with the cavalry of rescue. God himself, the maker of heaven and earth. And that's how I understood that verse in that moment. And the fact that it came back to me in that moment was a great comfort, because if nothing else, I felt and I knew in my heart that God was there and that I wasn't alone. And the message I took was, I brought you this far. I'm not about to abandon you now. And somehow I rolled out of that dressing room and did the show. And you know, it's not like, oh, and then my migraine disappeared. It just was able to go on. And for me, that's just an example of how getting a different perspective when we're deep in our worries or our concerns or our shame spiral or our anxiety or our anger or whatever we go through as humans, that perspective to me has been so valuable. And that's something that I cannot self, it's not self-generated. Mm-hmm. We modern people are so self-reliant, and that's wonderful. But faith for me brings something that I cannot bring, and I'm so grateful for that.
That's amazing. You're going to put the whole anti-anxiety medication field like out of business.
Well, I don't know, because I say that in the book, you know, like I say we can avail ourselves of all of these different ways of dealing with anxiety. And I'm not saying that anxiety is a spiritual problem, because for some of us, and I probably would put myself in this category, you know, it's a chemical problem too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an emotional problem, and we need the therapy, and we might need a dose of something. But above all things, I think we also need faith, or we can benefit greatly from it.
You're absolutely right. I have anxiety as well. I can, I get your dark days. I get the whole thing.
See you at the next meeting.
Exactly. This is one path I had not tried. So, you know, who knows?
Yes.
Barking up the wrong tree.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You write about something that had happened to you in law school that had filled you with a lot of shame, but then you don't go into some of those details. You leave a lot of holes on purpose, and sometimes you're like, not telling you that. I'm like, okay, got it.
Yes. I know the second chapter is like, and I wrote it when I started writing the book, and then I thought, oh, they're never going to let me keep this in, and maybe I don't even want to, but it's all about, here are all the things I don't want to write about. This bad thing happened and that bad thing. And don't drive yourself crazy imagining the worst, but just know that, yes, I've had hardships. I've had extraordinary blessings and luck, and no one is more aware of that than I am. But if you're wondering, what the heck is she talking about? Does she really know anything about being sad or struggle? Yeah, I do. But we don't need to get into all the whys and hows. So yes, I do leave a few little holes.
But what stopped you from sharing some of that?
I mean, it's because it's personal and because it wasn't necessary, I think. I hope I gave enough. To me, this book is incredibly personal.
No, it is.
I'm excerpting journal entries that I cringe to reread, let alone publish to the world. You know, so I knew that if you're going to do this, you can't be a wimp. You got to be authentic. You got to bring your whole true self. But there's a point at which you get the picture, you know? So I dabble in telling you the few of the things, the reasons, some of the hard things I went through, but it's not tragedy porn, for lack of a better way of saying it. You know, it's not like, oh, the book isn't about me. I mean, it happens in the context of me, but the book is about faith and it's about God. That doesn't happen in a vacuum. Your faith happens in a real life. So you have to come forward and say, you know, I learned this thing when I messed that thing up, or when this beautiful thing happened to me, like motherhood, you know? So I write a lot about my kids because motherhood has been one of the most transformative spiritual lessons of my life. So I'm willing to go there a little bit, but not any more than is necessary. I hope I struck the balance. I really tried to.
No, you did. I was just curious.
Yeah, of course.
At your book party, which I went to with the invitation.
I know, you're so nice, Christine.
Anyway, all the women standing up with you were saying, you were thanking them, and it was clear that each one had encouraged you to write this, and that you were very nervous about going there and writing this and doing the whole thing. And now it's a number one New York Times bestseller, blah, blah, blah. Just like, you know, and you were so, you seemed genuinely like nervous about, about it. How do you feel now? And what has the reception been like on a personal level for you? And I mean, you were emotional then. I can't even imagine now. Have you been like sobbing or what?
Yeah. I mean, I'm so touched and tickled, and I'm just kind of like God is so interesting, right? Like and that's not like, oh, God made my book a bestseller. It's not that. It's just more like I was so scared and I didn't know what people would think. And it's so personal and it's like putting your heart out there. And then I don't have to tell you, we live in a world that can be quite cruel and judgmental and unforgiving. And so to be putting your whole real self out there for that scrutiny is extremely terrifying. And the other thing is even though my friends and family, this is no surprise, you know, you and I, if we go out for a drink, it would end up at some point, if we had a good talk, we would talk about faith. Cause I'd be like, oh, well, I learned it this way. So it's very much something that all of my friends and family and colleagues know. But we also live in this cosmopolitan New York City modern world. And it's, you know, I thought, are people going to be like, this is weird. But in the end, I had to just not care about that. I felt like I had something good to say about God and I wanted to say it. And I wanted to at least try. And then when I started writing, I'll never say that it was easy or effortless, but it came fast. I mean, I did this book in less than a year. And because it was such an alive and thrilling experience. I felt for a long time all last summer, like maybe this isn't even going to be a book. Maybe this is just some little experience that God and I are having together. Mm. And isn't that so sweet? And I would think to myself, oh, God knows me so well. He's thinking I got to give her a project or she needs a goal or a deadline. You know, that's my personality. So for a long time, I was like, maybe this isn't even going to be a book, but it will be a really cool process to go through. And I'm just so thrilled and touched and moved by how people want to connect of all different faiths and all different walks of life or no faith at all. I mean, people of different faiths that I've been friends with for years, I'm having deeper conversation with and finding out what they believe. And I mean, people are sending me songs they like to listen to in Hebrew, you know, or verses that mean something to them. And these are people I know. These are friends I've had for years. And how cool to open up that lane of meeting. I mean, I just did an interview with Kara Swisher, who I love and adore and think she's so amazing and she's so fierce. And she said, I want to talk to you about the book. And I was like, you do? She was like, oh, I love talking to people about their faith. I mean, I'm agnostic, but I'm so interested. Hmm. And I love that open-heartedness has been what I've encountered. Not close-mindedness. And that is amazing. And I hope that maybe if people are reading the book, that then that's their experience too, that it's a way in. You know, the book is not to persuade or proselytize, but I hope it's a way in to discuss these things, no matter what your perspective is on it.
That's amazing. It's like, look who's laughing now, all of you people who want to get me. Take that.
Well, yes, but maybe they didn't in the end, or maybe good in this world. Yes, I know. I'm like... Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to be all Pollyanna about it, but, and by the way, I'm still nervous because at any moment I feel like, oh, somebody could be like, oh, why did you do this? Or, you know, the worm could turn at any moment. And I know that. So I'm just counting my blessings. I'm grateful. And I'm also, you know, I'm just retreating back to like status quo ante, you know, like I wasn't a writer before. I'm not out there. I'm not looking to change or raise my profile or become to some new version of myself. I'm back to just, I wrote the book, I put it out there. I'm so happy that people are responding to it. And now I'm like back to normal, back to regular programming.
Yeah. I can't imagine that anybody associated with the production of this book doesn't want you to write another book, right? People must want you to write another book. Do you want to write another book?
Well, no, of course I don't. I really don't want to at all, but I didn't want to write this book. I mean, I did, but I didn't. So I kind of feel like I'm not going to say I'll never do it. Although I did tell my publisher I'm one and done because I can't imagine. But if some set of circumstances came up in 5 years or 10 years, and I felt like I had something to say and it felt important and right, then who's to say I wouldn't? But I'm not anxious to do that. I'm not looking for the sequel. I didn't think I'd have enough to fill a whole book. I certainly don't have enough for two. So I'm like, here it is. That's it. This is the sum total of it I had to say. And now, I probably shouldn't say. I was going to say there is, I don't think I'm supposed to say. Never mind. There's one little thing that goes along with this book.
It's fine. It's fine. Go ahead.
But I haven't announced it. So ignore. I don't know if I'm allowed to. So
okay.
You can cut that
something
out.
Perhaps.
Or consider it a deep tease.
A deep tease. Yes. We are officially teased. Thank you. Now we'll
Yes. Something little.
Something little. Okay. By the way, I just noticed on the bookmark that you have a Wordle on here. That, do you play Wordle?
Yes, I love Wordle. And actually, that is refers to back to the very last chapter of the book. The last section is about purpose. And the last chapter, I kind of talk about what I think my purpose might be.
Okay.
Which is also really feels very exposed to say, I think this might be my purpose. And it goes, there's a Wordle reference. So the Wordle, there's a Wordle, you will see the Wordle in at the end of the book. I actually got to reprint. It doesn't say Wordle, but we just copied the squares.
Okay. I did not get to the last chapter. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no worries. No worries. You'll be like, oh, well, what is her purpose?
I know. Clearly your purpose is to create Wordle puzzles, nobody would have known that. So there you go.
Oh, I love Wordle. I love all those New York Times games, except for Spelling Bee, because I can never get it, and it's so frustrating.
Do you have authors you admire or who have written similarly about faith in a way that you felt like, okay, if so-and-so could do it, I could do it?
I mean, I am embarrassed to say I'm a lot less well-read than I should be, but there are writers I admire in this space who I've read. Maybe not their whole books, although in the case of one name I'll give you, I have read her whole book, which is Shauna Nyquist. And I mentioned her actually
in
my book. And she's been, Shauna, she's an amazing, Shauna's an amazing writer in this space. Sarah Bessie is another writer in this space that I think is profound. And Kate Bowler.
Yes.
I love Kate Bowler. She wrote this book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. And she's just such a deeply thoughtful, cool human being. Who's like my friend in my mind. So those are some of the writers that I admire that are writing in this area.
Amazing.
But I've never actually read their entire books because I have short attention span problems.
I relate to that as well.
That's why your podcast is for me.
I know, it's short and it's short.
Yes.
Nobody has time to do anything or focus on anything.
No.
So
exactly.
So last question, what advice would you have for aspiring authors?
I think my best advice would be to just write and don't wait for the book deal or wait for where you know the book is going, but to just start. And the other part of it, and I don't know if this was just specific to me because, you know, my background is in journalism and, you know, I'm used to writing something that has to be ready to be published or broadcast that day. So I'm very, my inclination as I was writing last year was to kind of perfect it. I didn't want to go on to the next thing until I had really judged it and it was presentable and could have been turned in that day. And Richard Engel, who is a friend, he's our foreign correspondent. I met him for coffee just during this whole time. And I told him he's written a ton of books. He's prolific. And he said, don't do that. Just write it. Don't sit there and make it perfect or, you know, like massage it and want it to be, just keep going. A book is different than what we do every day where we want something to be presentable and you could turn it into your editor and say, okay, I'm ready. This is ready for broadcast. He's like, just keep going. So I don't know if that applies to everyone, but if you're the kind of person who likes to feel that something is really beautiful before you go on to the next, just write rough. Actually, my editor, he had all these really funny sayings and one they were all kind of irreverent and I loved it. And one of them was, write drunk and edit sober. I think he quoted somebody like Ernest Hemingway or Poe or someone. It was their quote, but I loved that. Write drunk, edit sober.
All right. Well, this might undo some of the anti-anxiety stuff, but anyway, I'm kidding. Never mind. All this conflicting advice and, you know.
I know.
Alcohol,
sorry.
And God.
But it's like,
no,
you know, let it rip. Let it rip is kind of the idea. And then you can perfect it later.
Well, Savannah, congratulations. I'm really happy for you. You seem so genuine and open and kind. And I have no doubt that you are who you are in this book to everybody. And that is something I think people can feel and why people respond to your book, right? When you're really open and you really put it out there, people take that as a gift, right? As opposed to when you feel people posturing in some way in their books and then you're like, forget it. So, you know, you went out with an open heart and people just like took you in. And I think it's great. It's amazing.
Oh, I'm so grateful and relieved. And thank you, Zibby. Thank you for inviting me. We have a lot of friends in common.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many people since I wrote a book said, you got to talk to my girlfriend, Zibby. So I'm like delighted to be here and be on the podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Of course. Anytime.
And your bookshelves are goals. I love the rainbow. Yes.
Thank you. All right. All right. Thanks, Savannah.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.